mein auf den Supercast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 352. I'm Adam, and hello, topping day what? Here's Debbie Melrose.
They not only look like chickens, they are chickens.
Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Roll up, roll up, roll up, see the monster show.
And Andy Nunny.
There's nothing like a good curry.
That's true, in fact.
True.
I did have another one, but... try clucking. That was the other one I was going to use, but I thought, no, I think we use the one we've got. Yes, today we're going to be doing a Carnival of Monsters.
Yay!
And that got a yay for some reason. And might as well just go straight on with it. I don't think there's anything to report, is there? You lot have been misbehaving yourselves, as you usually do. And we'll just have to... no Mary this week. Well, not in person anyway, but we'll come to that later on. Right, I just need to get this to finish and turn the volume down on this machine. I'm doing it slightly differently. Oh, what's that noise?
I have a feeling I know what her opinion was.
She loved it.
Yeah, right.
So, the Carnival of Monsters story begins with a title sequence. I can't find my scrolling bar. And yeah, and then we get a scene with some very bad skull caps.
I think they're gimp masks from Pulp Fiction, aren't they?
Are they?
Yeah. You've seen Pulp Fiction, haven't you?
No.
Yes.
They're gimp masks, aren't they?
A little bit like them, yeah.
It reminds me a little bit of Max Wall.
You realise, Master, yes. You realise we get both Paka and Davros.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations for working that one out there. Right.
Yeah.
So.
Harry Sullivan.
Yes, oh yes.
And you worked that one out as well. Well done. Yes. Right. So So a consignment is arriving on this planet. Obviously, it's an alien planet. Because
what planet is it?
They've really gone overboard with the sort of spaceship. Space suits. The suits in which these sort of they're more like creatures that
they
don't
were
talk.
Like robots
mute
than anything else,
mute
really,
creatures,
aren't they?
Yes. Are wearing
hello,
sort of,
Isla.
They look like the same outfits that the Time Lords are wearing in the previous story, actually. Hello, Tom. Hello, Isla.
Before you go to bed, Isla, what did you think of the Doctor Who you watched?
It was great.
What did you like
Yay.
Isla, take no notice of the nasty man.
Which one? Nothing wrong with Kirby, he's a nice bloke.
Yeah. Who did you like best?
Joe.
And what was your favourite bit in the story?
My favourite bit was one of those monstery things. I can't remember their names.
Or the Drashigs.
Drashigs. The Doctor
and Joe. You like that bit when they chased them? Okay. Go on, night. Thank you, darling.
Night, Isla.
Night, Isla.
She was so involved in this.
I didn't mean to do that.
Go.
I didn't mean to do that.
What didn't she mean to do?
A bird that tweets.
Right. I'm going to get ahead of Kirby. Next time you blow your nose, Andy, can you mute your microphone? Right. Because it does rather sound like you're doing something else.
I can't wait to hear L&T Butcher tell us about the proletariat.
You mean me?
I'm sure that's going to come up with the function, whatever they're called.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought that the little instrument that... What was that noise?
It's me picking my...
Yeah, but it's right next to the blimmin' microphone. The little tuning fork killing machines are quite interesting.
Yes.
And the little special effect they used... You know, whilst the little tuning fork was set off, was quite reminiscent of the Ice Warrior story that on the moon, which was
machines
of doom.
Did they use that special effect last story as well?
Similar. I think Robert Holmes is the link there, because it was a similar sort of, you know, superfluous looking device for killing people, and the dying bit was quite similar to the way that the people were told to die in the Ice Warrior story as well, the sort of dramatic little dance they did as they were saying.
I believe that may have been Stuart Fell who fell.
Yeah, and Deb's favourite quote from a lot of Doctor Who stories is, "Ah!" And then the TARDIS materialises on what looks like a sort of hold of a ship, and the Doctor is convinced they're on Mitabilis 3, but Joe is not
master,
so convinced.
Yes. This is the very first mention of Mitabilis 3.
Oh, joy, yes, we might have worked that one out. Yes, the first mention of Mitabilis 3, which will have some significance as we move ahead in the story. Vorg and Schoener get into their... Oh, actually, Schoener strips off, which I might have to replay that bit, because that's quite nice. Growing up,
If you want to, Adam, you do.
I'm quite
that,
happy to, because Schoener, the actress who was, I think, portrayed by Cheryl Hall, was in a TV series in the 70s called Citizen Smith, and I was about 10 years old.
She was actually married to Robert Lindsay.
Mm. I had the hots for her when I was about 10 years old, and I thought she was really pretty, and she's quite pretty in this. She doesn't look like that anymore, I hasten to point out. But, yeah, it was quite nice when she stripped off her...
Actually, it's interesting,
placement.
Both the leading actresses in this story were both up for the role of Jo Grant.
Oh, yes. There you go.
So, you know, there was all three Jo Grants, and they said also she was Rabbit. Rabbit? Rabbit?
She was Rabbit.
She was Rabbit. Yeah, she was married to Robert Lindsay for 6 years.
There you go.
Rabbit?
Robert Lindsay was once up for the part of the Doctor as well at some point. Just like to point out.
So a lot of Doctor Who connections is what I mean.
You were going to say something, Debbie?
I said he would have been amazing as the Doctor.
Yes, he would. Right, so they're going to set up their little machine as if it's some sort of... it's a little bit like a... If you go to an exhibition somewhere, they've got somebody in the corner with something they're showing off. And they say, roll up, look at the marvellous carnival monsters in this machine, etc., etc.
That's my quote.
Thank you, Kirby. Yeah, so that's basically what they do, and they're trying to, because the silver people with the dodgy hairpieces aren't convinced, and they're very suspicious of anybody. In fact, they're depicted to be customs and excise, aren't they? Basically,
they're actually supposed to be grey,
and
the info text says that the script described them as grey, and so the makeup people made them grey.
The typical civil servants, basically. I mean, I should know because I'm one.
Yes.
Yeah, I've actually got the script here, and it says they have silver-grey skin and hair which runs around the back of the head and almost meets their bushy eyebrows, leaving the top of the head bald, is the description they've given.
Does it say
just
about
like
the badly fitting
like
caps?
Adam, then.
Excuse me?
I said, does it say about the badly fitting hair pieces? Bald caps, whatever you want to call them.
Yes, the worst part of that is in episode 4, where when they rebroadcast it for that Five Doctors special way back when
the Five Faces, yes,
the Five Faces, they Barry Letts asked for them to remove 44 seconds of the bald cap coming off.
Oh right, okay. So the
DVD has the the ending that you ended up with when they removed the 44 seconds.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
For the extras.
Thank you.
Why on earth was that one chosen for the Five Faces? I mean, there's far better Pertwee stories, four-parters than that. I mean, why on earth did they choose that one?
No idea.
Bizarre.
Right, so the Doctor...
Well, I like this one.
Nearly. So the Doctor and Joe started walking around the ship, and Joe got a bit scared by some chickens. And then the Doctor was convinced the chickens were in fact the most intelligent species on the ship, and that actually he wasn't far off, to be fair.
They're not far off, are they? Mm. No, actually.
So they go for a little bit of a mosey around the ship. The trouble is, the ship for me that they're moseying around doesn't quite look like the picture of the ship we see later on. But
no, because this was filmed on a ship that was being taken for scrap.
Oh, well, there you go then.
There's the famous story of how the cast and crew were told they could take anything they wanted because the ship was being scrapped, except for the main compass. And Pertwee wanted the main compass, but he also knew because of his Navy days that there was a spare compass stored underneath a chair someplace.
Yes.
So he took that one. And then later on, the ship people said, hey, you guys, you took the compass. We can't find it anywhere. And sure enough, the main compass was gone. So Pertwee said he was going to go back and look for himself. And he, instead of looking for himself, he put the spare compass back where it was, and he told everyone, come over here. Here's the main compass underneath here. And everyone was satisfied.
Yes.
But then later on at a convention, he told this story, and one of the other people on the panel with him, who was also involved with production, fessed up that he was the one who stole the main compass.
Ah. Well, that was a long story, wasn't it, everybody? Right. Yeah, so,
thank you, Kirby. Yeah, thank you, Kirby. Yeah, that was fascinating.
Good. Enjoyed that. Thank you.
So, yeah, then Harry and some bird turn up in this room where the Doctor and Joe are hiding behind a desk. The Major has a bit of very quickly... he must be very tired because he went off sleep very quickly in a rather impossible sleeping position, has to be said, while reading.
I don't know. I think I've fallen asleep that way.
No, people tend to go a bit floppy, don't they, when they fall asleep, not sort of sitting upright with their head slightly drooped.
I haven't. I don't know what you're doing.
No, you'll do it. You're still doing it now. So Joe convinces the Doctor, or tries to convince the Doctor they're on Earth by showing him the newspaper, and then a monster appears at the screen, and everybody screams up. Sorry, at the window, and everybody screams up. Screams. Well, no, that bird screams. I beg your pardon. And while they're trying to sneak out of the room where they couldn't possibly get out of that room from the position they were in behind that desk, not unless the two people happen to go and hide in the corner with their eyes shut. Nevertheless, they get caught.
Yeah, you know, the odd thing about having that plesiosaur come in several times is that after a while, later in the story, it's completely ignored, and instead it's kind of substituted with the Drashig.
Ah, very good. How about that one then?
Yeah. It's a completely different monster. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was like, done, that's some Kirby. Type
of, yeah, it's a dinosaur at first, isn't it? That's a so-and-so saurus or something.
Kirby,
wasn't
look.
It?
Yes. Kirby. Yeah. Kirby, look.
Oh.
Right.
It had to happen at some point.
Thank you.
Don't get an extra point for that. Just wanted to ding the bell. Right. So.
Aww.
Me and Mac's got to catch up with this. This is me old Mac. So, yeah.
Sorry, Tom's reading The Hobbit upstairs, if you can hear background shouting.
So, the Doctor and Joe are sort of arrested for being...
That's funny, Debbie. I'm reading The Lord of the Rings at the moment. I finished The Hobbit last week, so I'm on The Lord of the Rings now.
Anyway.
It's because we were talking about midges and hobbits.
Yes, yeah.
Anyway.
J.R.R. Tolkien went to the same school I went to and actually lived in the same part of Birmingham I lived in.
Excellent, right. So the Doctor and Joe are arrested for stowing Beach away days. And then dumped in a little cabin.
Stowaways.
And there's a date on the cabin that Joe finds quite interesting, or the Doctor
Master?
Does. Nearly got to the 17th minute of the episode.
Master, the calendar is wrong. If you match
yes,
up the
days. Yes, the calendar. We knew this last time we watched.
That's a 1925 calendar. Yes, it's wrong calendar. Yes, it's
wibbly wobbly, timey wimey, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, Packer's got a great interest in this machine called the Eradicator. I have to say this. He really does like his Packer, Eradicator. Yeah. Andy. Yep.
Sorry.
What on earth was that?
Andy putting it back in the ice bucket by the sounds of it.
Basically, they get to the point, the Doctor and Joe, when the monster attacks the ship for a second time, that they better get back to the TARDIS as quick as possible, and then a hand comes in and grabs it.
Yes!
That's
awful. Hey, this is a CSO demonstration.
Yeah, so
that really was awful.
Bric-a-brac, as it was called.
It looks like my little TARDIS that I've got.
I've got a whole bunch of them.
It's quite interesting. If you get some very, very old Hornby Railway sets, you can get genuine police boxes that were in the Hornby Railway sets, which are quite charming. And I think that was, in fact, a Hornby police box they used for that particular scene.
I think I've got one of those.
Plesiosaurus, that's what I was after, the name of the dinosaur it was supposed to be.
Yes, well done, Deb. I think Kirby said that about 3 years ago. But
yes,
doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Right, so hand grabs the bric-a-brac out of the scope. And meanwhile, then Vorg does a little bit of scope demonstration to the grey people. And he also demonstrates that what?
The silver people.
Oh
no, they're grey
people. Great.
Whatever.
Great.
The people that are aliens. And he demonstrates that he can turn...
No,
up
it's their planet. They're not aliens.
He can turn a knob up on it. Right, I'm going to mute you, locking it lot, in a minute. He can turn a knob up on it and make them all a bit cross. Because the Doctor then gets into a nearly fisticuff situation with Harry. And yes?
Queensbury rules!
Queensbury rules! Yeah. The Queensbury rules are the first rules that insisted on boxing gloves. Therefore, they are not using Queensbury rules.
Oh, my God.
My dad told me that years ago when we watched The Quiet Man.
Right.
Because in Mark, they say, cite the Marcus Queensbury rules in The Quiet Man, and they're doing bare-knuckle boxing, basically. And my dad told me that at the time. I can remember that a long time ago.
Excellent. Right. So the Doctor and Joe manage to sneak away again when the knobs turn back down again and they all forget. And then they prize open this hexagon-shaped thing and go down into the workings of the scope, which is all very cool. It reminded me of the Play School set a little bit, actually.
And what yes. I did...
why was Joe using the solid screwdriver, not the Doctor?
Because the Doctor asked her to.
Yeah,
what I found quite interesting. Remember, I don't know, it was a couple of weeks ago that I got confused by a scene in which they shot through something pink, and then they moved the camera to the left, and they were actually shooting through. Those pink items are appearing in this particular scene. Funny enough, but I can't remember. It might have been. It was on Omega's. I noticed, Kirby, I said Omega, not Omega, as it was irritating me listening to the last episode of this show when somebody who will not be mentioned kept on saying Omega throughout the whole episode. And I was shouting
Omega
at the radio, Omega! Omega! What did you say, Kirby? You are fibbing. You said Omega.
Who?
Oh. Omega.
Who?
I say Omega.
Omega.
I say
Omega.
You say Omega. He says Omega.
What's on your head?
Omega.
What's on your head?
I just slapped my coaster into my face in frustration because I'm getting on the verge of muting you lot. Omega. Right.
Who was saying it incorrectly?
A person. Oh, they owned up.
Okay, there we go.
I can't say it properly. I say Omega.
That's because it's wrong. Why? It's Omega. What is it, Kirby?
Omega.
Omega.
He's trying to say it right and still got it wrong.
the way you remember is you just quote Omega. You go, you say Omega.
No, I can't. It's Omega to me. Sorry, don't know why.
It's a different word. It's like a word that's spelt the same that sounds different phonetically.
Fair enough.
It's his name.
You say potato, I say potato. You say tomato, I say
essentially,
tomato.
Yes. But it's like Alicia used to be called Alicia. But it's not Alicia, it's Alicia. Even if it's phonetically... can you mute your microphone when they do that, please? Because that has now made people take their earplugs out, or I'm going to be hanging people up. I'm getting wound up now. I've had a very bad weekend. Right. What are we going up to? I'm just whizzing through these. But yeah, so the grey people, who we haven't had the names of...
Silver.
I thought they were silver at the beginning, but I was told they were grey. They're sort of trying to find a reason to destroy this scope.
Yes? One of them's called Pletra.
Now that's their actual names, not their not the species they are.
Yeah, they have a species name. I don't remember what they are.
And yeah, so basically, they aim the eradicator at the scope, or Pletrak does anyway, but he gets told off for it because he hasn't had proper permission from the Great Zarb, is it? Is it the Great Zarb? I can't remember his name.
Zarb, yeah.
Which reminds me of...
Zarb is the brother of Davros, I believe.
Really? Where did you get that one from?
Well, it's mentioned... The character played by... Michael Wisher.
You finished.
Right, yes. I finished.
I think you're struggling there, Kirby.
Yeah, so they didn't get eradicated, and we find that the scope is quite good at deflecting the eradicator beams. And then I think Vorg checks the machine's okay, and we see a Cyberman on the monitor.
Master?
Yes, that was good.
Master? Yeah. A Cyberman with his head not... completely fastened on in the back.
Oh dear, never mind. Hey, hello Tom, please help.
Oh, they're called the Lermans.
Yes,
Help. No, Lurmans, that's Morgan Shearna.
No, he just
Minorians. I guess they're just called Minorians, according to the discontinuity guide.
Yeah.
Tommy did a haircut.
What?
Yes.
He's going for the boy band Quiff. So I think he's leaving it as it is, Tom. Anyway, I'm going to have a quick sip.
Very doctor.
What?
Very ten.
Yeah. Very ten. Yeah, so that's basically what he's aiming for. Yeah. Right, so...
what I'm aiming for.
Moving on. Meanwhile, the Doctor and Joe are inside the workings of the machine. Sorry, the Play School studio. I'll get it right in a minute. And they find their way out through a hexagon thing into a sort of like a marshy area where a glove puppet, I mean, sorry, a Drashic comes up.
That was absolutely awful. It really was.
Yeah,
so exactly. It's a Doctor Who monster. Woohoo!
Exactly.
But,
it's one of my favourite Doctor Who monsters, actually.
It's quite charming, to be fair. And it comes up from his marshy.
You know what worries me?
What?
Is that what about the creatures that were might have been living in those little marsh pools that they just happened to throw dry ice into?
Well, they didn't worry about things like that in 1972. Right, so they're saved from certain glove puppet death by the hand from the glove puppet coming down and stopping the... Although, I'm sure it would have given Vorg a nasty bite. And there were three of them that could have bitten all three of his fingers off, so I'm quite surprised he didn't come up with that. What on earth was... in heck? That was one you didn't have time to mute the microphone for.
There, I sneezed.
Grief. So they survive within an inch of their life, and then the Doctor and Joe have got time to have another little conversation. I think it's at this point the Doctor decides he's got to try and get out of the machine somehow. And the Grey People, or Michael Wishart, to be precise, is scheming to... what is he actually scheming to do? He's trying to sort of make himself look good, I think, in some ways.
Well, it's only almost rebellion, I think, but it just is the most pathetic rebellions ever.
Yeah, he's trying to... he knows the Drashics are sort of vicious, so he's trying to manipulate it so the Drashics get out of the machine and attack everyone, and he's going to sort of leg it off somewhere so he doesn't get killed by them. And then come back and sort everything out and become the hero and maybe take over from the Great Zarb. I think that could be it.
Kallik, that's Michael Wisher's character, is the brother of Zarb, the president.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Joe, meanwhile, gets sort of embroiled in the usual time loop situation that's going on the ship and says, "Here we go again," a couple of times.
yes, that was amusing.
Here we go again.
But she does have a conversation with that bird, and she nearly sort of realises something weird going on, because she says,
she starts to realise something.
She almost does, doesn't she? Yeah.
It's not quite.
Yeah. She realises they've been there an awful long time. And, so the Doctor, meanwhile, does get out, because obviously the Drashics are now wandering around the sort of workings of the machine. And after a little bit of a battle on deck... and the dead Drashic gets killed by some sort of very powerful beam to kill a Drashic, as we said. The Doctor sort of stumbles out of the machine and makes poor little Shearna scream, which is quite scary.
Oh, the whole point, stepping back a bit, using dynamite is must be one of the gormless things to do, because you're in a ship, you're going to throw dynamite into something, it's going to blow the side of the ship out, so it's a big hole inside the ship, so you're going to sink. It's like, what? Have I missed something?
It's a science fiction fantasy TV show.
So
the Doctor. Now, what got me? Remember when the TARDIS was taken out? Little bit of bric-a-brac. It took quite a while before it grew back to its normal size. Well, the Doctor.
Yeah, they don't. Immediately. They have like seconds. Yeah.
Grows back to his normal size, which made Shona go ugh. And I love the way that Packer says, "Eradicate a detachment immediately." But the Eradicator was actually there, and he could quite easily have grabbed the gun himself and used it himself, but he didn't. The Doctor then sort of stands up, says hello to everyone, and says, "Oh, this is the Miniscope. How dare you, essentially, use this band machine, blah, blah, blah." And And it goes to, he's told that the machine is owned by Vorg. And, oh, hello, how do you do? Oh, you shouldn't really be using this machine. And then, so, this is my assistant, Shona. Oh, hello. And bows to her and everything. Which I thought was really funny.
No, that's a nice touch, that was.
Yeah, it's very suave of the
You're
doctor.
One showman to another.
Yeah. He was, yes.
He seems to be wearing a jockey's jacket as well, which is interesting because I think he was, his character in Heidi High was connected with horses. I thought that was quite an interesting link. Andy, that was the microphone you just did that against, and we just got about six listeners' ears just blown out. Right, so Joe meanwhile is skulking around the ship again, and Michael Wisher's character has decided he's going to help the Drashigs out of the machine by prising open the side panel, because they've realised that the Drashigs actually can't get out that side panel without a bit of help. The Doctor, meanwhile, wants to get back in to get Joe out, so he helps Vorg set up the machine so he can do just that. And so we go. Yes,
there's a bit of sabotage going on as well, isn't there? So they can get away with killing the Lerman's baggage, as they call it.
All right.
Yes, they get away with killing them for treason. Remember?
Yeah. What I liked most about that scene is when he's trying to sort out the machine, and he doesn't really know what he's doing, so he says to Shona, can you just touch that bit there? She gets an electric shock. So, that's a live one then.
That's a live bit then.
I did like that bit.
Master?
Yes, dear.
Costumes in this, by the way, they're pretty good. Well, they should be, because the costume designer is James Acheson, who later on would receive 3 Academy Awards,
yes,
including the Academy Awards for the costumes in The Last Emperor. He also did Time Bandits, The Meaning of Life, Brazil, Dangerous Liaisons.
So quite a lot of stuff then. Right, thank you, Kirby. Yes. So,
Spider-Man, right, 2, so, Spider-Man,
thank you, Kirby.
Where's the mute? Daredevil. Where do you mute? Hang on, there's a mute thing. I can actually mute. inside the machine, it's starting to get a bit hot, isn't it? And there's a scene in which Ian Martyr's character wanders in, and his shirt is actually wringing wet. I mean, it can't really be that hot, really, that his shirt is wringing. Oh, I don't know, it's just it was a bit silly. I think they overdid the sweat on that one quite a lot. And then the machine blows up, but not before all the TARDIS apparently sends everybody back to their home planets and stuff. I thought the Time Lords would have done that for them, actually, but this is just the sort of machine the Time Lords would get angry about.
So what up to the side? You only saw the ship going back, the Jurassic's going back. What up to the side of it?
Well, they probably all went back, didn't they? They haven't got time to show.
They all went back. The thing is that, think this through. What happens if everyone? History basically had that ship being vanished forever, and now it's back. Do they go back to their normal lives? Is this going to change history?
Yes.
Hang on, I'm just checking recording. That's good. It would have been rather awkward, wouldn't it? So the Doctor and Joe then get out just in the nick of time. They run off while Vorg does a little betting game with Packard.
Yeah.
And that's essentially the end of the story. Right then. The Carnival of Monsters. Now, I know Andy did mention about the fact that this was one of the Five Faces of Doctor Who stories. The first
also,
time I saw it.
It was shown in the wrong order, because this was shown before the three Doctors.
On that one it was, yeah.
When they re-showed it, yeah. They did the original story, The Dominators, then they showed this, then they showed the three Doctors.
Yeah.
Well, that's the production order anyway.
It may well be.
Yeah, it's not the broadcast order.
No, it's not broadcast.
I'm trying to talk about what I thought of it now. Anyway, as I was saying, obviously it's got a few flaws, but there's so many charming elements to it, like the characters of Vorg and Schoener and the rather daft comedy grey aliens. and I do quite like the timey-wiminess of them being in that time loop thing. I thought that was quite interesting. The Drassics, well, we just have to accept they did try very hard to make them look like ferocious monsters, but this was 1972. For what it was, I think it was actually quite good. And on the whole, that Doctor Who is now a programme that's going through space and time and rather than stuck on Earth. So it holds quite a lot of affection in my heart, The Tyler of Monsters. I'm so pleased it's only a four-parter, but there's more four-parters from now on in Doctor Who, so woohoo! So, yeah, okay.
Yeah, except the next several are six-parters.
I said there's more four-parters in Doctor Who from now on. Yes, there may be some more six-parters, but there are more of them. Where is that mute thing? It must be on here somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sitting out in my backyard.
Anyway, right. So, yes, I quite liked it, really. What do you think of it, Debbie?
Well, I was... I'm glad that I watched it with Isla. I'm really glad I watched it with Isla because she was so into it. She was so scared of the Drashigs, where I was laughing my head off at them. She got so involved in it that I was actually really concerned for how scared she was, because she was just so into the fact that these monsters were real and they were going to get Joe and it was all frightening. And the picture of her on the Facebook post that I put up is just priceless, of her looking worried. And I just love the fact, I'm glad it was a four-parter. Six-parter would have been way too long, because there would have been loads more of the Groundhog Day effect going on. But I really enjoyed it as the fact, yes, we've got off Earth again and we are now, you know, even though Joe thought they were on Earth, they weren't. And it's just nice. It just felt like the second part of Pertwee's era, if you see what I mean. It just felt like now we're actually going ahead with him to being the time traveler he's supposed to be, you know, rather than, you know, just stuck on Earth solving Earth problems, even though a lot of problems come to Earth. But it's just nice that he's now moving on, and Joe is taking it in her stride and has a lot of faith in him, which is what I like, because that carries forward in a lot of stories, is how much faith the companions have in him as being able to solve the problems, which I like, because obviously he is a flawed person, but also every new generation is a different sort of flaw, if you see what I mean. So it was just really good to just see the next phase of Pertwee's Doctor. And I really enjoyed it. Watching it with Isla made it an absolutely brilliant adventure. So yeah. Monsters though, if I hadn't watched it with her, I would have just been laughing my head off the whole time.
Thank you very much. Andy, what did you think?
It just wasn't very good. I mean, you know, it was a poor story. It didn't have much storyline. The special effects and monsters were, yeah, let's be honest, they were awful. They really were bad. It just didn't seem to flow. It was slow. I mean, my notes, first episode, I've got about four pages. Then it sort of drifts off after that. There just wasn't a lot to it. I think that's the problem. It just was the timey-wimey looping round time loop kept going round and round and round again. And that's the problem. And it's, I mean, God, I think it was six-parted. It was just died a death. I thought the was it Lurians? Were just...
Tellurians?
Oh goodness, what? The grey ones.
Lurmans,
thank you.
Lurmans, is that what they were called?
They just were awful. They just were so stereotypical. I mean, they were civil servants like I am now, but I just thought it was... Yeah, it was just like and that's it.
Well, we wouldn't know what Kirby's going to say.
I loved it. It's one of my favorite of the Pertwee era. It's fun. It's funny. I love having all the people that we normally associate with other famous roles in it. Paka! And when I first saw this a few years ago, I was live tweeting it. I ran across those tweets and I was going, Harry Sullivan! Because I did not expect him to be in it, and it was just a complete surprise. Yeah, the Drashigs are silly. Of course they're silly.
They're brilliant.
But they have cool teeth, and they move along with being on sticks that are being manipulated like Muppets. It's just, they're silly and fun.
He loved it.
I loved it. It's just fun. So there.
Me. Well, thank you, Kirby. Well, that's good then. That was quite quick. On the whole, I think everybody's sort of quite light. Let's see what's coming through on the Facebook feed. Anne-Marie Blackall said, yeah, I made one. Laurie Nick said, oh, I'll see what she means by that. Laurie Nick says, hello. And then she says, she's got chicken posted. And then Anna T. Butcher said, interminens. What's that mean? Interminens.
Interminers.
It says minens.
And then, okay, but you know, there's feedback several places, not just wherever you're seeing it.
Ian Kirk, essentially, I think he's telling me about his script. We won't talk about that. And then Jeff Waddle says, interminen 4 AC drash dish rags 1.
Yes, okay, dish rags. Drashig is a...
anagram of dish rags?
Anagram of dish rag, yes.
That was difficult to work out, Kirby, wasn't it? So, talking about play school episode.
Now, did you find the other comments?
What other comments? I'm not on that bit yet.
Oh.
We're going to do feedback, everybody. It's going to be feedback. We're going to do that now. So, in the meantime.
Yes, and there's feedback.
Yes, I know, but we're going to do the feedback in the order that I suggest. Otherwise, I'll set Debbie on to you. Debbie. What have we got here then? August the 20th. I've got something come back. All sorts of stuff here. August, what date today?
27th.
I've got this come through.
How you doing? Okay, Connor, love monsters. Yeah, brilliant. You know, I remember I never saw this story back in the day of his first broadcast in its entirety. My experience of this the first time was playing out on the streets and inadvertently watching this or seeing scenes from this on other people's tellies through their windows. Some of the classic scenes of the hand coming down into the miniscope and so forth. So that was my first exposure to Carnival of Monsters back in the day. You know, I didn't see it again until I came to Australia when the ABC absolutely flogged repetitively, you know, the Pertwee and Baker eras of Doctor Who at tea times throughout the week. And this is one of the stories that they actually that they repeated endlessly through Earth, I think, about that time as well. I saw it again when I came back to England in 1981 when the BBC broadcasted the five faces of Doctor Who. So I saw it again. But despite all that, I've never tired of seeing this story. I'll watch it again and again. And I didn't tire of watching it this time either for this little spiel. I quite enjoyed it. Perhaps it's the wonderful costume design of the aliens on Interminer that really captivated me. Wow, great stuff. Mm. The loose-fitting masks and so forth, and the costumes. I mean, they were a bit daft. And then, you know, I could never get over that way with his story. But nevertheless, it was. It didn't detract from the enjoyment of it. I loved it. I could never quite work out the significance of the prehistoric monster coming out of the Indian Ocean when they're on the ship. Because that idea never really went anywhere, did it? I mean, where did the monster come from?
I said that.
They're meant to be in the, you know, in the 1920s, in the middle of the Indian Ocean, and all of a sudden a prehistoric monster pops up. I mean, was that some sort of, you know, malfunction of the miniscope or something, or what? I don't know. But apart from that, I could never really get the gist of that. Apart from that. I loved it. This was a great story, and in my opinion, was probably one of the better Pertwee stories.
Yay!
Particularly at the start, when you've got the two scenes of the ship and the scene on Interminer going from one to the other. I think as a first-time viewer, you might have a job to understand what the connection is, but it's because it doesn't come quite apparent till later on that they're actually in a miniscope. Yeah, so great idea, great stuff. Some brilliant classic scenes, of course, the you know, the Doctor using his sonic screwdriver, which is later, when trying to distract the Drashigs on the marsh, a scene that was used again in Planet of the Spiders, another fantastic story in my opinion. And I think from memory, in this particular story, it was the first reference to Metabilis 3. I'm sure Kirby might correct me if I'm wrong, but this time on, as far as I'm aware, this was a continual, you know, there was a continual reference to Metabilis 3, right up until Planet of the Spiders. And during this time and from that time, the you know, Pertwee's swan song, you know, I think it's a fabulous era of Doctor Who, it really is. Yeah, so interesting. Anyway, look, some great comedy aspects as well. I love the scene where Vorg says to his assistant, "Here, touch that," and she touches his button and it zaps her. Oh, that's a live one.
That's one I said.
Great stuff. Fantastic. But what's the most thing that sticks out for me in this story is that it oozes personal nostalgia. It really does. Way back when I was a young lad playing out on the streets and seeing this scenes of this story, like I said before, in through the windows of people's living rooms back in Accrington up in Lancashire. Yeah. Happy time in my life. So how can I not like this story? I love it. Take care.
That's a Billy Kirkbright, everyone.
Thank you, Billy.
Thank you, Billy, yep.
All right, we've got this. I hope it works. Last time it didn't work because it was a zip file, which was very awkward. It looks like she's done the same thing now. Oh, no, what's this here? What on earth has she done?
Not GarageBand
again. It is, but it's she's obviously done it as a zip file again. I did mention this before. Curses. Right, I'll download it and see what happens. In the meantime, let's see if I can get... this sent to... what's the name again? Lovely Debbie Melrose woman. So you can read this while I'm sorting out technical difficulties.
I can't wait.
Technical difficulties.
Do I get a point if he says proletariat?
Yeah, probably.
I suppose so, if I can remember to add it to you. What's your name again? Debbie Melrose, isn't it? Debbie.
I think so.
Andy, I don't know what you're clicking, but it's incredibly loud.
Sorry.
Right, Debbie Melrose. Yeah, I found you. And my friends with you, apparently so. That's a message. And there you are. And I think I've copied it, so this should now paste the whole message. Oh, it did. Right, so you can... You should have it around about now while I sort out the technical difficulties with Mary's feedback.
It's just coming through now, hopefully.
I love your optimism.
Just toss it over the fence.
Yeah. Here, throw me a phone. Let's see it. Okay, Doctor Who and Vorg's Crimes Against Life on Inter Minor. Dear 20 megabyters, Carnival of Monsters is, of course, a closely studied dualized polemic placing in parallel the plight of the underclasses in a highly stratified oligarchic...
Andy, can you mute your microphone, please?
Andy. Oligarchic and nepotistic society with the gross abuse of the rights of sentient life forms captured and caged in very limited scenarios. The classic Holmesian triumvirate form three parts of the ruling class. Plectract is clearly a victim of the Peter Principle, having been promoted to the point of his own total incompetence. Kallik obviously is an experienced, albeit somewhat circumscribed, strategist in a world where nepotism holds sway.
I thought you were going to say something else for a minute there, Debbie.
No, I was very careful with the way I read that one.
Okay.
The Aurum plainly exhibits no discernible talent, lest it be a firm grip on the coattails of his fellow tribunal members. The functionaries are the brutally suppressed working classes treated with contempt, and the alien Lerman entertainers with their despicable device actually add a very unstable element into this very static environment, utilised by Kallik for his own political machinations. The Drashigs are the most highly volatile force unleashed by this conflation of two very questionable scenarios. The evil Vorg ends up murdering his Drashigs for his own advancement, they're moving forward with his con man capabilities. It should be noted that many people fall into the foolish trap of criticising the inter-minor functionaries' masks as poorly realised. It is blatantly obvious that this terrible class-ridden society forces the lumpen proletariat to wear poorly... Well done. Bingo! To wear poorly fitting masks while the oligarchy of suitable green... I've said that wrong, I know that. Of subtle green makeup and wigs. Grey, not green. Why did I say green? It is all part of representing the oppressive class oppression, not dodgy design and costuming. We also learn that Packer, Davros and Moss of the Spider Sect used to wear grey makeup back when they lived on Interminer, but the first was just as incompetent, the second was just as devious, and the last was just as wet. Also, Harry Sullivan's dad had... a lucky escape on the SS Bernice. All in all, Carnival of Monsters is a masterpiece in social commentary and a cracking good yarn. The repetition is cleverly handled not to allow it to get boring, and the multifaceted plot strands come together to a neat and satisfying climax. Another triumph for this golden age of storytelling that is the Pertwee era. Also, this is one of the more serious attempts at sci-fi within Doctor Who, and excellent for it. Next up, Doctor Who and the Dalek Master Plan Redux Part 1, or Dragons Firing the Greatest Show in the Space War. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
Thank you.
Sorry,
Alan.
I messed it up again.
You something'd it up.
I messed it up again.
No, you messed it up again. Got this.
Hi, guys. Sorry I can't be with you today, but I had to share my opinion of this weird story, Carnival of Monsters. And if it sounds like I'm reading, it's because I am. If I were to just sort of do this, off the top of my head, I probably would talk about this story for about 3 days. So bear with me while I read what I wrote down. Words to describe this story: bright, creative, energetic, amazing. Finally, a Pertwee story I thoroughly enjoyed, and I have Robert Holmes to thank for it. Joe has grown up and become a worthy companion to the Doctor, in some ways foreshadowing her successor, Sarah Jane. Oh, and the Drashigs are great monsters. The way they are filmed, totally believable. Bursting through metal, out of control, very scary. Every episode is packed full of things contributing to the plot. I never felt that there was any time filler to flesh out any of the episodes. Like so many other stories we've watched so far that could be reduced by one or more episodes, this one definitely could not be. The actors have been given characters that you can tell they relish playing. The dialogue is so well written. When told that he is both merciful and compassionate, Calix says, "One has twinges." I loved it. That would have been my lead-in line if I'd been on the show. And how unexpected was the closing of episode 3 with the actress screaming at what should be a monster, but instead it's the Doctor. I vote this to be the best Pertwee story I have seen, and I have a few more that I haven't seen yet, but this will be a hard one to beat. More stories like this, and I could become a real Pertwee fan. Oh, and I pick Deb to win the quiz and Andy to lose it. So that's my feedback for today, and I hope to be with you next time. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks for your efforts. Ian Bird.
Master.
Oh, good grief.
Master, I'm looking at the picture of your monitors and everything.
Yeah.
And you've got...
Our 20 megabyte
thing with Who Won under it, framed, yes, with a bunch of signatures.
Yes.
Well, who all has signed that?
Louise Jameson, Daphne Ashbrook, Colin Baker, and Nicola Bryant.
Awesome. You want to
Ian Berg.
A closer picture of it.
No, I don't. Ian Berg, Carnival Monsters is a fun little story with much to love about. It is a perfect story for the 10th anniversary series, as it shows Doctor Who at its best. We start off in an alien world with the comedic grey aliens discussing rules, regulations and zapping other aliens for not working correctly. And you thought your performance management at work was harsh. Then we're taken to the 1920s on board a steamship heading for exotic India in the last days of the Raj. And the Doctor and Joe do everything we've come to expect and love about them in this story. They escape from the locked cabins, put on silly accents, escape from terrifying aliens, make the villain look like a fool, shrink in size and crawl about a computer, in brackets, a machine which we will basically see again in 10 years' time in The Five Doctors. and make some interesting comments about chickens. Yes, Carnival of Monsters has it all, yet its greatest attribute is its subtle themes. And then it's a quote, nothing political, just a show to entertain, nothing political. While some might think this sums up Doctor Who perfectly, they would of course be wrong. Sci-fi was created to put a mirror up against society's failures and mistakes, and like any good sci-fi, Doctor Who does this too. We may see it more blatantly in other stories, such as The Green Death or The Mutants or the Peladon stories. But Carnival uses comedy brilliantly to show how societies may be ruined by endless rules and regulations and the threat of those who believe they would do a better job than the elected leaders. Due to the failures of Heath and Wilson's governments in the 1970s, there was a real threat of a coup in Britain by numerous different political factions. Of course, what Carnival really highlights is this idea, what is acceptable entertainment. In a time when caged animals, animal fighting and a general acceptance of politically incorrect entertainment was the norm, Carnival asked the audience, would you like it if others looked on you, on your discomfort and imprisonment? Carnival of Monsters is a real little gem of a story and continues the high quality of Series 10. Thank you, Ian.
It's very interesting what he said, because actually there was actually a possibility of a military coup in Britain in the 1970s. So that's very interesting, him saying that.
Yeah, wasn't there also like an 8-hour week or something like that?
It was a 3-day week.
3-day week, that's it, because to do with electricity being turned off and stuff like that.
Yeah, the miners' strike and things like that. I mean, God. It's not
a bit
fun,
bleak,
wasn't
it? 1973, I remember that. A little bit.
Hello, Tellurians. This is Ian Kirk. I hope some of you enjoyed your solar eclipse.
I'm being followed by a moon shadow.
Carnival of Monsters by Robert Holmes. Groundhog Day on a ship.
Andy, I can hear you spinning that disc.
I used to get my episodes from a torrent site that is now closed down. So I watched this one on that site with adverts that Mary does not want mentioned. We had ridiculous government officials, Venusi in karate, and the doctor on his back with his knee bent. Standard for this era.
Yep.
Game of Thrones makes a fuss about bending the knee, but Pertwee was all in favour. Wandering around circuit boards made it change from corridors, and there was a marsh instead of a quarry. It was well done, considering the budget.
Yes.
We will see Ian Marta, Michael Wisher, and Metabilis 3 again. Bye for now.
Yes, thank you very much. I'll see you in Kirk.
Nice
everyone.
One, Ian.
Okay, right, we've got some more feedback. Paul Gabert says, this is probably my least favourite Pertwee story. It just doesn't click for me at all. I find the pace slow and plodding. The aliens just plain stupid, and the repetitive scenes irritating. Sorry, not my cup of tea, this one.
What's wrong with these people?
Well said,
Andy.
Well said.
Andy, every time you touch that thing, it makes a horrendous noise.
Right.
And I haven't got time to edit out horrendous noises. Alan C. Butcher says, oh my, it's a masterpiece, though. Laurie Nix says, am I the only one grossed out by the unsightly head steam in that clear plastic derby? And then Kirby Bartlett Sloan says, they even comment about that in the infotext on the DVD. And then Laurie says, never mix an acrylic wig with a plastic derby and hot studio lights. Terry Miles says, I watched this one on the first transmission and did not like the monsters, the Drassigs, even on an old type of telly. The CSO or green screen was awful. Every time Every time I've seen it since, I've grown to like it more and more. I still think the Drashigs are rubbish, but the aliens are slowly growing on me. If it was made today, it would be 100% better. It's very true. A lot of things would be 100% better if they were made today. And a lot of things would be worse if they were made today, it does rather.
Master?
Yes, dear.
I have a comment about this quarry business. First of all, the marsh scenes were actually filmed in two different places, depending on, and they would shift back and forth with editing. Mm-hmm. The marshes themselves were the Tillingham marshes in Essex, but the cave entrance,
yeah,
was actually in Carwood's quarry, a sand and gravel pit.
Okay. Thank you.
Also, where was that?
It was also in Essex.
Okay. Marvelous. I used to live in Essex, so yeah, I might have
known it. I could send you the exact address.
Oh, then. No, yeah.
God's sake.
It's off the A414 turn east towards Danbury and Malden. And the roundabout.
So that's not far from where we used to live, yeah.
At the roundabout with the BU 1010, follow that towards Cold Norton. When you reach that village, turn left on the B 1018, which heads towards Southminster.
Riveting.
Bear left.
Right. Was there any more feedback?
There you go. Well, thank you for that. I'm stunned.
Any more feedback that I missed out on any of the other persons that apparently posted on the 20 Mile Go White page about feedback? Anybody?
Going once, going twice.
I assume the answer is no.
Yes. Well done, everybody who did provide me with comments. Thank you so much. Even Kirby's happy about it.
That was a lot of feedback. We're starting to get much more feedback.
Mm.
Indeedy. Just make sure there's nothing else. Nope, there's nothing else. So therefore, I can say it's now time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One.
I won't.
I think I did rather well doing the quiz questions this week, simply because I threw them together in about half an hour, so I think I deserve some sort of...
Yay!
Right, so let's see what we can do. It. Andy, who do you think will be ahead at the end of the questions?
Kirby.
I can't see my keyboard, it's behind my microphone. Kirby, who do you think is going to be ahead at the end of the questions?
Andy.
Debbie, who do you think is going to be heard at the end of the questions?
Me! Why not?
You, why not? Who do you think is going to be behind at the end then, Andy?
Me.
Kirby, who do you think?
Me.
Very interesting. And Debbie, who do you think?
Me!
Wait, you can't be both.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't. Who do you think is going to be?
I tried that once. Andy.
Okay.
Sorry, Andy.
Yes,
again.
No, don't bother me.
There we go. Eventually get there, don't we? First question goes to. Hang on, I lost my page. It's going to be Windows. Andy. Yeah, I think it's Andy. Yeah, it's Andy, yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Right, hang on, I've got to get my thing over there and thing over. I've got so many windows to try and keep going. I'm going to have to shut your faces down so I don't actually see them because it's getting on my nerves. All right. Andy, what group was Metabilis 3 in? What group of planets?
I know.
No idea.
Therefore, it's a... And that therefore goes into the bonus spot, which becomes that. Anybody?
Yes, I said I know.
Go on then, Kirby.
The Acteon group, which later becomes a galaxy.
Oh, don't over-elaborate with the blimmin... I forgot to mention that.
All right,
I'll deduct a point in a minute. Kirby already started the game with a point for being a smart aleck, but he deserved that one. Right then, Debbie.
Yes.
Oh no, Kirby. Sorry, it's your question. Yep.
Master.
What is the air of Metabilis 3 like?
I didn't know it had any special air. Well, I know it's poisonous, but we don't find that out until later.
Debbie wants to have a go.
Gaseous sulfides.
Interesting. Nope, the answer was wine. Right.
What?
Wine.
It was what?
Wine.
Why?
It's okay. Like wine. The doctor said it's like wine, for God's sake. Right, so there is a bonus question, 3 points available for this. What colour was Joe's blouse?
I didn't have a question.
didn't you?
No, she hasn't.
I apologise. That is your question then. What colour is Joe's blouse?
I don't know. White.
After all,
I'll have a go.
Go on then.
Was it pink?
Hmm. Bloody hell! That was my fault for trying to make the questions easy this week. No, it was blue. No, it was pink actually, Andy. Yeah, Andy. I apologise, it was actually pink. Pink, yes, it was indeed pink, yes. Sorry, made a mistake there.
Okay.
Right, so this is the bonus question. What does the doctor first say to the colonel? Deary me. Did everyone hear that question? It's all gone very quiet.
It's going to be something like tickety-boo, isn't it? Or something like that.
What?
No, wasn't that. And Debbie said it was what, something like that, which was... And it was my quote at the beginning of the show. So the answer was, of course, hello, topping day what? So you lost. So this is bloody ridiculous. It really is.
I got the what right.
Right, so the bonus pot question stays as it is, and we move on to the next round. 6 points in the bonus pot. Andy's question.
Got it.
What paper did the Major read?
Jeepers.
No, that's wrong.
Bloody hell. I've got the date of it written down. It was something like the... Oh, crikey. I'll go with the Times. If he's wrong, I know.
No, it wasn't the Times. Kirby knows, apparently.
No, I don't know, but except I think it might have been the Evening Standard.
Oh, that's interesting.
Why?
It was the London... Sorry, the Illustrated London News.
News.
Yes,
okay. Right.
I've got the date written down instead.
Kirby's question.
Master.
What was the date of the newspaper?
I know.
Let him have it.
I know it too.
I've got a point. I've got to do this. I've got to play this by protocol. And I've got to change that to that. And Andy knows.
Saturday, April the 3rd, 1926.
Correct answer. Right. Debbie.
Yes.
By the way, Julia says happy pie minute.
Marvellous. Thank you for that.
It's 3:14 in the afternoon.
Okay. Debbie.
Yes.
What date were they stuck on a loop on?
I think I know.
Don't know. 4th of August. I don't know.
All right. Hang on. I've got to change that to that. And Andy knows.
I think it was like June the 3rd. 26.
I'm going to give you a point. That was June the 4th. That was on the calendar right next to it. I'm going to give you a point for that. Well done.
Okay. I was a month out.
Bonus pot question. 10 points in the bonus pot for this question. Listen very carefully. What sea creature attacked the ship?
I know.
Go on then.
Yes. Well done, Debbie.
Debbie, you played that so badly, I think I should deduct a point. Because if you played your joker on that, you would have got 20 points.
No,
that was a bit of a dull moment. Dull, Debbie.
You're deducting a point. You're deducting a point because you
forget. No, I didn't actually deduct the point. I say you deserve to have a point deducted for not playing your joker on that bonus pot question. So the scores are in last place with 2 points, Kirby. In second place with 3 points, Andy. And in the lead with 10 points, should be 20. It's Debbie. Next question goes to Andy.
Sure, okay.
What time was the clock when the doctor and Joe were locked in the cabin?
Oh, God. Oh, yes, you do. Actually, all right, I'll go Joker here.
Yeah.
8:25. Yes,
is the correct answer. That's good. Right, so the next question goes to Kirby.
Master.
Describe Vorg's hat in simple terms.
Joker.
Yeah.
It's a transparent plastic bowler.
Precisely. The word transparent was the phrase I was looking for there. Right. Debbie.
Yes.
What was the cliffhanger of episode 1?
I know.
I can't really remember, but I'm going to go Joker. It's the hand coming down and picking up the TARDIS.
Love the way she says she can't really remember, even though she got it. What the hell was that?
Andy.
Sorry, the bottle falling over. Sorry.
I was prepared to demonstrate on the video.
Were you now? Well, no bonus pot question, so we move straight on to Andy's next question.
Okay.
What known enemy of the Doctor was seen on the scope first?
I know.
It's a Cyberman.
Hmm. Ooh, twice.
It's getting better.
Well, now it's played, opened up on iTunes. What the bloody hell's going on here? Oh, this is good.
What are you doing? What's
the Beatles.
Going on, Adam?
That's the Beatles and a demo version of some Sergeant Pepper stuff. Yeah, so let's reiterate. It's for that one. So a point goes into the bonus pot.
Where's it gone? There was a Cyberman there.
There was a Cyberman there.
It was.
Next. Anybody want to know the answer to this one?
What's the question again?
Wasn't it one of the monsters that worked for the Daleks?
Yeah, so what they called then?
I want to say Vogons, but I know they're not.
All right,
too late.
Ogrons. Yeah, Ogrons.
Right, two
but
points.
Adam, there yes. were Cybermen on there as well.
Yes, there was.
Yeah, there were Ogrons as well.
Yeah.
That's why he bamboozled you.
As I say quite clearly in the question, what right, so what known enemy of the Doctor was seen on the scope first?
Ogrons, yeah, and I got the wrong.
Right,
so,
okay,
because
okay,
you lot are arguing, 2 points deducted from Andy, 2 points deducted from Kirby.
Yeah, okay.
No points deducted from
Debbie.
And the bonus, whose question was that for?
Mine.
Mine, right, so yours, sorry, mine. Kirby. right. What shape was the floor plate? Oh God, why did I put that question in?
I think it's a
hexagon.
Yes, it was a bloody hexagon. I don't know why I put that giving question in there. Stupid twit. Never mind. Debbie.
Yes.
What was the name of Vorg's assistant?
Sherna. The trouble is, it's an abbreviation, one of my favourite things from Final Fantasy, Shinra, so it's,
okay.
I'm trying not
well
to say.
Well done
that.
For remembering that one. Bonus pot question. Which of the scope circuits was broken? Yeah?
I think, was it the anti-magnetic cohesion circuit?
No. 3 points on the bonus pot now for the same person. Same question, one more go at it for someone. Not Andy, because he's frozen out. All gone very quiet.
No idea.
Oh, my God.
Why do you have to wait until I start playing the countdown music?
Delta circuit.
It's the Omega circuit. Yes. Omega circuit.
Omega.
Well, if you'd said that, I would have said that's the right answer, Debbie. Limit next. Someone's got a loud engine.
Good grief. I can't hear anything because of the traffic.
Yeah. Andy, your question.
Okay.
How did the Doctor and Joe, or it says on my question, the Doctor and Jew, escape the Drashigs? How did the Doctor and Joe escape the Drashigs? That's for Andy.
I think I know what you're asking.
Sorry, not got it.
Point in the bonus pot, and apparently Kirby knows what I'm asking. I hope so too, because I did ask the question. Go on, Andy.
Well, the hand comes down and chases the Drashigs away.
Correct. Kirby's question.
Master.
What did Sherna wear on her upper arm?
Some sort of bangly thing, I don't know.
I'm going to give you that. Yeah, well done.
Really?
It says a pearl bracelet, but that's a bangly thing. So, yeah, okay. I'm going to give you that, yeah. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you, Master. Thank you, Master.
Debbie?
Yes?
How many buttons did Andrews, have on the front of his jacket?
Oh, Jesus
Christ. Six?
Educated guess.
I'll try.
But wrong, go on him.
Five.
Oh, well done.
Yes.
Correct answer. And bonus what question is this. What did Vorg not do until the last possible moment with the machine? The Doctor told him, don't do that until the last possible moment. What
Turn
was it?
Turn it off.
No, I think I know.
Hang on. I've just got to put down a bonus pop thingy question, and Andy knows.
Was it Switch on Phase 2 or something like
That's
that?
That's what I was trying to remember how to describe
it. It is
that.
The correct answer. Right, so apparently there's 3 points on the bonus pot. Was that your normal question, Debbie, or was that the bonus pot question?
Bonus question.
Okay, so that's let's straighten that one out.
So okay. What's the scores?
The scores are at the moment. In last place with 6 points, it's Andy. In second place with 12 points, it's Kirby. And in the lead with 16 points is Debbie. But bear in mind that Andy and Kirby had 2 points deducted each for doubting my knowledge.
Adam, we didn't get a word. We didn't get a word of that.
Share.
You went very share. Can you say that again, please, Adam?
Okay. No, he didn't. I heard him perfectly.
He went share.
Adam, can you say it again, please?
Right. Any of the listeners that think I went share, you can have £5 each. Because I know full well, if you listen back to this podcast, you can hear me perfectly clearly all the way through. And... right. What I said was, Kirby and Andy had 2 points deducted for doubting my knowledge on this particular story to be correct. Right, so there's 3 questions left. No more bonus points. You have to get these right. Kirby,
you know, Andy... it's too bad we can't hear things every time traffic goes by Andy's backyard.
Yeah, but he's still got to answer the question, though, Kirby. Right, it's Andy's question, funny enough. What was the name of the scheming character played by Michael Wisher? No, it wasn't.
No idea.
I know.
Sorry, what did you say, Andy?
No idea.
No idea, no. It was a... Right, so that remains at a 2-point... Pardon? Calic.
Calic.
That's just Calic, Kirby. So that's 4. That's 2 points.
His last name's Davros.
Yeah, thank you. Kirby, your last question. Basta. What? Yes.
Basta.
Yes. No. What's the ICE? Sorry. What does ICCA stand for?
The Interconstellation Corrective Authority.
What does SA stand for?
Silly arsehole.
No, smart ass. Right. Last question. Debbie.
Yes.
What was the wager that Playtrack made at the end of the story, the last one?
I know.
Oh, 5 units of credits.
Nope. Andy?
10 credit bars.
There we go.
Right. So the current scores, before everything else is taken into consideration, in last place with 8 points is Andy, and joint lead with 16 points each, it's Kirby and Debbie. However, right, Andy predicted Kirby to be ahead. Essentially, he's correct.
That's it.
Kirby predicted Andy to be ahead. Essentially, he's wrong.
I expected you to do better.
And Debbie predicted herself to be ahead, which is essentially correct. So, I did that wrong. I just changed that one. Right, so, Andy predicted Andy to be at the bottom, which is essentially correct. Mm-hmm. Kirby predicted Kirby to be at the bottom, which is essentially wrong. And Debbie predicted Andy to be at the bottom, which is essentially correct. So, the final scores of this week, so you won't get this one, in joint last place with 32 points each, it's Andy and Kirby. And the winner this week with 64 points, it's Debbie.
Yay!
Get in, Debbie, get in.
Yeah, it's interesting to note that Debbie tried to flout the rules at the beginning of that to try and pick herself to be at the top and the bottom and had to change it at the last minute just by one quick change of her mind, won the quiz. There you go. All right, sorry, does someone want to say something then?
No, it's fine.
I was going to say, I think from now, let's start doing this indoors now because obviously it's a bit dark now.
Yeah, so that'd be good because then we wouldn't have
to
put up with the very loud trucks going past.
I'll have to go to the conservatory from now on, I think.
Oh, it's a shame it's getting dark this time of night. It's half past eight.
It's perfectly daytime here at 3:30 in the afternoon.
Doctor Who news.
It's a bit of a shock if it was the eclipse, wouldn't it? Like,
yeah. Oh, the Candy, Candy Jar Books is to publish a new series of novels, The Lucy Wilson Mysteries, a spin-off from the Lethbridge Stewart range. The Lucy Wilson Mysteries, Avatars of the Intelligence, written by Sue Hampton and cover art by Steve Bickett. It's like a cartoony thing.
Oh,
right?
We're talking news? Okay.
Peter Capaldi has signed script up for an auction, and it says, charity auction, Peter Capaldi has kindly donated his annotated rehearsal script from Listen. What's from a while back, isn't it? Russell T. Davis gives a lifetime, is given a Lifetime Achievement Award. Former Doctor Who showrunner Russell T. Davis has been awarded Lifetime Achievement Award at the Edinburgh International Television Festival.
You know, I thought I used to do news. I'm going to turn the page off.
Doctor Who magazine 516 is out with a picture of Jodie Whittaker on the cover with the slogan "Time for a Lady." That's up for debate, and it has been debated, so we're not going to go back there anyway. Also in the issues, it talks about casting Jodie, Monsters, Inc., and all sorts of stuff, so that'd be quite interesting. The Black Archive update. Obverse Books have announced a change in the schedule for the Black Archive series of books. Not interested in that, so I'm not going to talk about it. Reference the Doctor. The latest special edition of Doctor Who magazine referencing the Doctor explores some of the landmark references works devoted to the series.
That wish is I could have heard that, but a lorry went by.
That was... You have to listen to the episode then. That's available at whowon.co.uk, by the way. The data
is
extract...
Is that whowon.co.uk?
Nah.
The Doctor Who Club of Australia have announced the first 100 issues of the club fanzine data extract will be released as a collected volume. Hey. Riff Tracks presents the Five Doctors. A special presentation of the Five Doctors will be taking place
at
United.
That was the last 2 weeks.
Dates
are... Or...
What?
Yeah, it was the 17th and 24th of August.
Took place a while back.
Yeah, I did not get a chance to do it.
Okay, Victor Pemberton has died. And he's the inventor of the sonic screwdriver. So that's... by way of tribute, I have my 11th Doctor sonic screwdriver here, and there we are. Thank you, Victor, for the sonic screwdriver.
No, we should all sonic at the same time in tribute.
I don't have one.
I'm
sorry, Debbie, it's very imperative that you do get a sonic screwdriver.
I know a place close by that Debbie could get one.
Yeah, whowon.co.uk, they have them there, dear.
Yes, I'll get one soon. I'm paying for a school uniform and stuff like that at the moment.
Or I suspect that very much so there will be a trader at the Isle of Wight Comic Con that has them. Right then.
I'm getting real tempted. One of these days I've got to get a fourth Doctor one because since the fourth Doctor was my first Doctor.
This is a fourth Doctor sonic screwdriver.
Yes.
Yes. I haven't got a third Doctor sonic screwdriver, actually. I need to get one of them.
How's the fourth Doctor sound?
Well, sounds like a sonic screwdriver.
Oh, so they're all pretty much the same.
Is that... There you go. Sonic screwdriver.
Oh, that's
odd. Why is it odd?
It just sounds different, but it's been a while since I've seen...
It doesn't sound the same, because the 12th Doctor one does this. Oh, it doesn't do anything. Oh. There you go. We're getting sidetracked here. Yeah, so Victor Pemberton, the inventor of the sonic screwdriver, has died at the age of 85. And he was also involved in Cyberman stories, Moonbase, Tomb of the Cybermen. And he went into freelance to write Fury from the Deep, which, of course, saw the sonic screwdriver appear for the first time. So he... it's a bit of a Doctor Who legend, really. I think everybody's heard of Victor Pemberton, apart from Debbie, maybe, but...
I'm aware. Don't worry.
Did we talk about Earl Cameron getting his 100th birthday? I think we did, didn't we, last week?
Yes. But, yeah.
That's the end of the news thread. Apart from the Isle of Wight Comic Con needs a mention, because I forgot to mention it last time. Because obviously we did sort of have Alistair as our exclusive sort of special guest, but they sort of hijacked him when they realised what a big name he was.
You mean he was originally our guest, but now
I said, well, can he come along as our guest? Oh, yeah, of course you can. And then they sort of, they did the bit of research and realised that, oh, perhaps we should have him as our guest, because, you know, so, yes.
Well, they hug us big time, then.
Well, not really, because they've given us free entry and a media thing, and which I seem to remember Ben mentioning something on the lines of having a chat with the celebs in the hotel before the actual convention opens, stuff like that. So I'm not. They don't owe us a thing. We're getting in for free, and we've got a exclusive access. So they don't owe us a thing. It's just a bit of a shame that. Well, he'll be there anyway, and after he knows that he should have been our guest, so he will probably be on the show.
4th and 5th of November. So. I see what's going on then.
I've already booked that off. Are you coming over?
Are you coming over then, no. Kirby?
No, I'm just seeing. I'm wondering how we're going to do the podcast that week.
I don't know. I'll be a special one that week. Obviously, I'm not going to be able to record at the con because I'll be too busy. But I'll probably put something together.
It might come to the point where in a couple of years' time we'll be able to do what you do at the night of the other cons, and we might be able to do a presentation.
Unlikely, because we'd still do the show at that time, and the con will probably be finished by 5 p.m. on the Sunday, so it's unlikely. Right, so, yeah, we've got some guests.
Oh, so we could record standardly on that Sunday.
I don't know.
We finish.
isn't it just across the street, like everything else?
It actually is.
Yeah, but no, there's no Wi-Fi there. It is Norfolk House. They have had another guest announcement, which is Rosie Anne, who played Bill's mum in the Doctor Who.
Yep.
Now, I'm not too sure whether this was the big announcement that that Ben was talking about, because he's not. It is good. It's new Who guest, but he sort of sent me a message saying, "Oh, you'll be blown away if you think Paul McGann was a good." Announcement, you'll be blown away by the next Doctor Who announcement. So I'm not quite blown away by it.
He's a doctor, yes.
You can't get much better than that. Yeah. It's the only thing that's going to blow it away if he sees Tom Baker is coming along. You know, that will blow it out of the water, yes. But
I just can't wait. It's going to be amazing.
But the fact that...
There's people coming who have been characters in some of my favourite films and things like that, so it's going to be so exciting.
But... She is a great guest. I'm not denying that. She's been in a few things other than... She was a Time Lord in Lie of the Land and... The Day of the Doctor.
Right.
So she's been in Doctor a couple of times, and she's Bill's mum. So.
Now, who's this Nick Joseph from A New Hope?
From what?
One of the guests is from the first Star Wars movie, A New Hope, Nick Joseph.
Deb knows more about that stuff than me.
Don't know, just searching now.
Apparently the Power Rangers are coming. Steve Cardenas, Kevin Duhaney.
You have no idea how excited Isla is for that
Jeff
one.
Perazzo, but I don't think they're the current current ones, are they? The current Power Rangers?
No.
Steve.
There have been so many different Power Rangers, it's crazy.
Steve Byers and his Far Cry 5 character Nick Rye. Said, see you soon, Isla White. So he's coming down. Don't know who he is. Oh, apparently he was in Smallville, Slasher, Man in the High Castle, Reign Immortals, and the new Flatliners. There's loads of things, you know, the beads needs, you know, the sort of merchandise things that are coming to the con.
He portrayed Ahul Hextrophon during the medal ceremony in Star Wars Episode 4.
Oh, whoopee!
Dan Waters.
Yeah, he's right behind Princess.
He says one of the people in the background during the medal.
Yeah, thank you.
He's right behind Princess Leia.
He's still a Star Wars. If you've been in Star Wars and you're visible on screen, you're a Star Wars legend, aren't you? Let's face it. Dan Waters, he's coming along. He's a some sort of comic book bloke. Somebody called Ram V. He's an author and comic book writer from Mumbai, India. This is why Alistair should have gone along, because Alistair has actually done art in the form of comic book. Pardon you, Andy.
What was that?
Andy's coming.
Too bad,
Andy's
too bad
coming.
We couldn't hear anything because another lorry went by.
I think that was Andy.
That was a motorbike.
It was not. It was a bus going past, actually.
Somebody called Michelle Harrison is also going along. She's got a very flashy logo. Something to do with Flash. I don't know who she is. Ryan O'Sullivan, who was a Titan Comics person. That's why they're interested in Alistair, because of his connection with Titan Comics. Warhammer and Evil Within. We've also got the previously announced guests like Brian Wheeler, who's a little person who's in Harry Potter and Return of the Jedi. You recognise his face if you saw him. Nick Joseph, like you say. John Altman, EastEnders, has not really got a comic version, but I'm quite pleased he's coming along. Josephine Gillen, obviously a sister of Karen from Game of Thrones. Scott Kyle from Outlander. It's a joke, Kirby. Scott Kyle from Outlander, and Andrew Lee Potts, who was in that awful series Primeval with his sidekick from S Club 7.
Would that be the brother of Bill Potts?
Hannah Spirit, who was also in S Club 7 and in Primeval. Jeff Perazzo, Power Ranger, and more Power Rangers that they mentioned previously. Well, that's it, really, as far as currently announced guests are. So still quite a good range of guests. Oh, apart from that bloke that Debbie got excited about. Is he cancelled?
This is going to be cool. There's going to be a drone photo shoot.
Yes, they are, yes. There is going to be a drone photo shoot, yes. I've bought my ticket to have my picture taken with Paul McGann, so I'm quite pleased about that. It cost £25, but it's a picture with the Doctor, so I'm up for that.
You should have gotten that for free because of your connections.
I should have got it free because I helped them book the photographer for a start. I actually got him hired for it. So essentially, yes, I should have got it for free.
Adam, I haven't paid for any pictures yet. I better get
them. Well, you're tough. You'll just have to do without having one.
Or I could just be really charming when we meet them.
Well, you'll probably be able to have a selfie with him, but not a proper studio shot like I've got.
All you have to do, Debbie, is...
Pardon you, Andy.
So there's motorbikes going past now.
Yes. Debbie?
Yeah.
Debbie, all you have to do is remind Paul McGann that you're a close personal friend with Mary.
Oh, Mary, yes.
Yes.
Find a picture of Mary with him and
with a tongue down his throat. Yeah, and that'll. What else we got coming? That's about it, really. I'm just checking through my list because there was one guest that Deb got particularly excited about, but I can't see him on there. Oh, it's that Brian O'Halloran.
One of my favourites. Yeah.
It's going to be a great convention.
Why don't I see the listing for Alistair? What's he looking
at? Because
he
hasn't been announced yet. We've announced him because we've got the exclusive. But he hasn't been announced by them yet because they're sorting out photos and getting a proper announcement. But he's going to be going. But they want him as their special guest. So he gets basically the perks that the guests get. So if he comes as our guest, he doesn't get any guest perks. But if he comes as their guest, he gets guest perks. Does that make sense?
Yes. I thought he didn't really like things like this.
He does. He likes certain cons and certain way things are done, and it's local.
He's for someone as great an artist as he is, he's kind of self-effacing and.
Oh yeah, he's not up his own, but he does like cons. He does like people appreciating his work, and this is an opportunity, a local opportunity. He can walk from his house to the convention carrying his sack full of artwork. And have some great fun. I'm spending some time with me. And not necessarily get paid for it, but get lots of perks at the same time. So it's a great opportunity for us to do that. And I did say to him that he will have to do some sort of cameo on the show. He didn't say no, so he could well be on the show in recorded form. So there you go. That's the Isle of Wight Comic Con, which we're going to be talking about quite a lot over the next few weeks, because it's something that's quite important to the show. Next time, what is it next time? It's some Frontier in Space, isn't it, next time?
Frontier in Space, which I've never, ever seen.
It's also quite poignant because it's a six-parter, but it's a bloody good six-parter. Yes. And Roger Delgado's last appearance as the Master. Now, it's, like I say, six-part story. We generally give ourselves a couple of weeks to do a six-part story. Yes. It's probably just as well because next week I'm not available because I'm doing a wedding. So it'll be the 10th of September. 10th of September.
Okay, yep.
Will be our recording for the Frontier in Space story. We could essentially do Frontier in Space and Planet of the Daleks, as they essentially the two stories run into each other, which is quite rare in this era.
Right, so, yeah, but that would be 12 episodes.
So in that case, we're talking about doing a six-parter in 2 weeks' time, then 2 weeks later, another six-parter.
Essentially, yes.
Because I can't do the 17th.
Yes, no, we're doing the 10th and then the 24th.
Okay, that's good to me.
Yeah. There's no way I was going to actually do the two stories side by side. That would be silly, like Kirby says. He wasn't waiting for me to finish what I was saying. All I was saying was that they do actually run into each other, which is not... You don't see a lot of that in this era of Doctor Who. They're very encapsulated stories until you get to Frontier in Space and Planet of the Daleks. They are very much... They flow. One flows into the other one. And I think that's the only time that actually happens in the Jon Pertwee era.
So why are we skipping the 24th?
24th is being skipped because we... 24th of what? What are you talking about? What are you talking about?
No, wait.
What are you talking about, Willis?
We're doing it on the 24th. It was Andy who said he couldn't do the 17th, and we weren't planning doing it the 17th anyway.
He's just outlining the fact he can't do it. 10th is the recording for Frontier in Space, and then 24th is a recording for Planet of the Daleks.
It's also another one I haven't seen.
Yes. Okay. So that's it, everybody. Thank you for listening to the show. Thank you for watching on Facebook and video. Before we leave the Facebook feed, let's make sure nobody else has actually made any more comments, because that would be a bit rude not to mention them. Anne-Marie Blackall, friend of the show, says, lol. Alan T. Butcher says, Kallik conquers and destroys. And Anne-Marie Blackall says, 2:30 here. And Alan T. Butcher says... You can have exclusive access to Alan T. Butcher. He's going as well, everybody. Yes, the most loyal listener who's actually bothering to turn up to a convention. We're actually here in Great Britain, not mentioning. Not mentioning the lovely Amory Blackall, who only went to that convention to see Kirby.
If they would like to import an American Doctor Who fan and pay for my trip.
What I suggest you do, Kirby. Crowdfund yourself over it.
That's what I'm doing to get over there.
No. Yes, crowdfund yourself over to get over to this convention. I can get you in for free, Kirby. I'm sure they'll once they realise who you are, you'll be fine.
I'm afraid I don't have the vacation time. No vacation time.
Okay, Mary.
I just used the vacation time for the eclipse.
Oh, I wish I could have seen that. Our eclipse was rubbish. The one we had when Alicia was 3 years old, it was a partial eclipse, unless you were in Jersey. We were lucky to see the full thing. That was quite dramatic. And then the next one we had after that was another partial eclipse. It was cloudy. There you go. So well done you seeing a proper eclipse. I'd love to see one day. Maybe
it was awesome. It was awesome.
Anyway, so like I said, thanks everybody for listening and watching to the show. Hope you come back again in 2 weeks' time for Frontier in Space.
Looking forward to it.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Bye, y'all.
20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.